This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living. I am Meera Sivasothi. Laterality refers to the preference most of us show for one side of our body over the other. As we go along talking about this, you will understand what I mean. Why do we have such a preference? Well, sometimes you find yourself, you know, having injuries on one side more than the other. We find ourselves leaning towards one side more than the other. There seems to be a biomechanical imbalance that can contribute to the causes of many common ailments, and many of us are simply just not ambidextrous. And I'm talking about being left-handed, right-handed, and some of us can actually use both. You know, all of this in relation to the musculoskeletal system, which only means Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon, in the studio with us. Welcome, Dr. Rajesh. How are you today?
Very well, Meera. Thank you very much.
Why laterality? I mean, it sounds so, you know, so not medical. Okay. What does that? What does it actually mean?
Which came first, the chicken or the egg?
I don't know.
Okay, so that's...
and it really depends.
Exactly right. So it depends who you ask and it depends when you ask it. Look, this topic really came about because of a few people I was treating. And actually one of the... there's a young lady whom I just saw today. She's a former medical student of mine. She's now a young doctor. And she came in to see me with an ankle injury. And she said to me, I finished med school. I'm waiting forever to start my internship. So I've gone to the gym. And now my ankle is sore. So you know, did the history. She said, yeah, you know, a long time ago I sprained it. And now every time I'm in the gym, my ankle is sore. I examined her and I said, okay, this ankle joint is lax. So it's sort of a little bit floppy or sloppy. And the muscles on that side were poor. So the question that we asked is, well, were your muscles poor before you injured your ankle? So did your poor muscles cause an ankle injury? Or did your ankle injury cause poor muscles? So that's why I asked, this is a chicken and egg story. And that's actually really, really, really common. The fact that people will have a chronic recurrent injury, usually manifest as pain. In the ankle, it's manifest as instability. I keep falling. You know, I hear that so many times. I just keep falling. And the skeletal system is made up of elements. The elements work together and support each other. So in this instance, her ligament was torn, probably had been for a long time. And the normal reaction there should be the muscle should grow. The muscle should say, hey guys, there's a job to be done. Ligament, where are you? Ligament's not in the office. Okay, so the muscles come in and they do the job. When I saw her today, after she'd had a good run of physiotherapy, I actually got the leg wrong. The smaller leg was her uninjured leg. The bigger leg was her injured leg. So what she'd managed to do was she'd managed to build the muscles up on the injured leg so much that they were able to compensate for the fact that the ligament was torn. So this idea of natural sidedness beyond being right-handed and left-handed, I think biomechanically it's reasonably false. So that's one of the ideas that I wanted to bring up. Patients will come in to me and say, oh, you know, I'm right-legged or, you know, I'm left-legged because, you know, that's their lead limb when they play a game like, you know, soccer or badminton.
But 99% of us are asymmetrical. Mm. So our bodies are not in symmetry.
Yeah. Well.
So how?
Okay. There's no reason for you to be perfectly symmetrical. So, in fact, there's some suggestion that perfect symmetry is a biological anomaly. And we find that actually very attractive. So beautiful...
We meaning?
The human race.
Okay.
So including babies. So if you show relatively young babies who are able to just recognize faces, if you show them pictures of beautiful people, as in beautiful that you would sort of see them on TV, yep, and et cetera, et cetera, babies prefer those faces.
And the symmetrical ones.
The symmetrical ones. Mm-hmm. And so babies prefer those faces. And if you analyze what's special about those faces, you see that they're symmetrical. And biomechanical sort of perfection is the exception rather than the rule. So I'm treating a gentleman now who I would consider, you know, if you take the analogy of me being a mechanic, right? So like I'm a body mechanic. Mechanics like fixing fancy cars. You know, so if you spend all day fixing, you know, Kalisas and Protons, you know, yeah, okay, you probably put food on the table, but it's not very exciting. And if you get the Lamborghini or the Porsche coming in, suddenly everybody in the room is excited. So I'm treating a couple of people now who are the Lamborghini and Porsche equivalents. And their level of athletic performance is amazing for the fact that they're amateurs. So their return on investment, how much effort they put in and what they get out, is absolutely amazing. So I concluded that it's a lot like beauty. If you're born with a good hand of cards, then it really depends how you play your cards. So biologically, perfect symmetry is the exception rather than the rule.
But does that mean 99% of us will have issues with the fact that we are asymmetrical?
No, because my Lamborghinis and my Porsches are also in my workshop. So if they're in my workshop, they're obviously busted.
All right. So something is wrong somewhere.
Yeah, no. So it's, you know, you can have a Lamborghini, but depends how you drive it. You can have a Porsche, depends how you drive it. It's still going to fail mechanically. You can have a Cancel, depends how you drive it. It's still going to fail mechanically.
Sure.
So failure is the natural consequence of having a skeleton. Mechanical failure is the inevitable consequence of having a skeleton. It's like you have a car. What do you expect for the car to happen? Function perfectly forever without ever causing you any mechanical difficulty? Of course not.
Okay. We're discussing muscle imbalance, whereby we seem to prefer one side of the body over the other. One of the reasons could be the fact that most of us are asymmetrical, but Dr. Rajesh has just said that is, we are pretty much the anomaly rather than we're the... We are... Okay, so if you have the 1% are...
Are
the anomaly.
By statistical definition, the 1% are... 1%
is the
anomaly.
Okay, so you are the exception. The 1% is the exception.
Yeah.
The rest of us are very much normal. But does that mean most of us will have issues? Okay, so how much does environment play a role compared to nature versus nurture?
Yeah, I would say... So let's take the analogy of a deck of cards again, right? So you may have a good hand, but depending on what sort of table you're playing at. And in my practice, I predominantly see lots of environmental issues, which is not unreasonable given the fact that that's the predominant wear and tear occurs based on the environment. And I was at a gym recently supporting an event, and one thing that I was really amazed at was the fact that all the critical surfaces at the gym are rubberized. That was the only gym that I've been to where I've seen every critical surface is rubberized. So everywhere where there's high impact, everywhere where somebody's going to land, anywhere where somebody's going to fall, it's all been properly rubberized. And I think that that really shows a lot of respect for the basic biomechanic that says that if you subject a joint or a part to an abnormal load, you get an abnormal wear and tear. And then as a result, if repair can't keep up, then you get an injury.
Surfaces.
So surfaces are really important. Say, for example, this office is carpeted. I see some people walking around without their shoes. That may be the fact that their feet got wet in the rain outside just now, or the fact that they're comfortable walking around the office just, you know, in their socks. But imagine if you had a different surface on this floor. Just the joint reaction force, what they feel under their feet in itself will give them an effect. People running. So running is another big one. So every time your foot hits the ground, you have a force that goes through it. Well, how much of that force is dissipated by the surface that it hits? How much of that force actually goes through the joint? How much of that force is taken by the tendon? Which is another really important idea about probably maybe not so much about this idea of symmetry, or but this idea of being stronger one side than the other. So if you say, well, what's the effect of being or having a preference for one side? The answer is you're more likely to wear that side out. So I see lots of right shoulders in right-hand dominant people. But the other consequence of that is where the muscles need to react to absorb a force, I see a little bit more of that on the non-dominant side. So this idea of the skeleton, or the let's call it the musculoskeletal functional unit, being able to respond in adequate time is actually quite important. So there's a gentleman who came to see me, I think it was yesterday, whose knee pain was just not getting better. You know, he's young, he's athletic. I treated him twice already, and he says, look, when I'm not doing sport, it's fine. When I do sport, it just flares up again. And it is very simple. I just got him to try to hold his leg out straight, and he couldn't. So I've got this thing called the helicopter exercise, where you sit on a chair, put your foot out straight, and you rest your heel on a stool of the same height, and you try to hover your heel an inch off the stool. So I call that the helicopter exercise. Right. And the reason is, it's very, very hard to fly a helicopter because you need to balance lots of things. And this guy said, "Doc, you know, I can push 200 pounds in the gym." I said, "Well, I've no doubt you can push 200 pounds in the gym, but you can't fly a helicopter." So he got the idea then that balance is really important in terms of his ability to not injure himself.
And that's where yoga comes to mind, actually. If you do yoga, you will find from the time you start and give yourself 6 months, you'll be able to see how you're able to balance much better compared to when you first started.
To a certain point. So I think what yoga does is it corrects a lot of the common misconceptions. Because I can't remember who it was. It was somebody on the show. I think it was YTL, if I'm...
LTY.
I think it was LTY who actually said, "Who teaches us to walk?" Right? Who teaches us to move? There's nobody who teaches us how to do things. We just assume we do it correctly. Mm-hmm. And the answer is, well, obviously not quite. Because if you look at different cultures, Japanese people move differently to German people. Sort of, it's a very stark comparison that I can make there. Just sort of, you know, taking general cultural stereotypes, you would say that Japanese people are fluid and graceful, and perhaps Western Europeans are not so much, right? And that's because their cultural norms of movement are different. So in that same way, what yoga does is it corrects those common mistakes that we make. But it can only take you so far without mindfulness, which is why, you know, happy to say it, Manasa Yoga, so they've been on the show before. I read about them 10 years before I came back to Malaysia. And the thing that I really liked about them is they said that yoga is about the mind, not the body. And so if you get the mind right, the body will follow. And the body is a tool for you. They're like the reins of a horse. So your body is like the reins that you use to pull the mind into the correct direction, which is a philosophy that I really subscribe to. Because if you don't get that neuromuscular thing happening where the brain talking to the nerve, talking to the muscle, repeating back and being conscious of where you are, then you tend to have fatigue and injury. So yes. fatigue comes first, and after fatigue comes injury.
I never would have thought that, you know, your brain can actually control nerves and, you know, everything else.
It
actually does.
Mindfulness. It's actually the other way around. It's logical that the brain controls everything. But what's less intuitive is that everything controls the brain as well. So, you know, this fake it till you make it, smile mm-hmm. till you feel better. It's all actually true. Because what postures you hold will affect what state of mind you have. And just consciously, mechanically correcting those postures will actually change the set of the mind. Which is very interesting if you consider what is it that muscle can do. So people assume muscle to be non-changeable, right? So if you have muscle, means you have muscle. But there are two predominant muscle types. One is called a movement muscle. So the purpose of that muscle is to create movement. And the other one is called a posture muscle, where the function of that muscle is to hold posture. Because if you think about sort of an extreme, if you look at the heart, for example, the heart is a muscle and it pumps blood like a big old black steam train. So that's a Nick Cave song. All right. Anyhow. So
it is. No, I ain't playing song.
No, you ain't playing
song.
Oh, okay, so anyhow.
Nice try.
It's probably very macabre for the station. But anyhow, Nick Cave and the Bad Seed. So if you think about the heart as a muscle, you would then say that any muscle can go forever without fatiguing or getting tired. But that's not true. So action muscles will fatigue. Posture muscles fatigue much later. Now, you can actually change action muscles into posture muscles and posture muscles into action muscles. And that's very, very, very cool exercise to be able to do those. You can do them by electrical stimulation, or you can do them by certain postures. So this idea that, you know, you keep holding your face in that position and it'll freeze like that we tell children, it's actually true. if you hold your skeleton in a certain way, there will be adaptations that fix the skeleton in that way. So the extreme sort of perspective on that is in children. So say, for example, a child is born with a birth injury called a brachial plexus injury. So that's where during birth, the arms, the nerves on one side of the arm are injured. The skeleton on that side grows very differently to the skeleton on the uninjured side. Literally, the bones, the shape of the bones, the configuration of the joints, all of which are different on the injured versus the uninjured side. And as orthopedists, we have to know it, because when we do operations, we have to know what's normal for them and what the principles and changes are that result in those abnormalities. So this idea of laterality is probably related to the brain. The fact that the brain has a different development one side to the other, the neural pathways are different one side to the other, and so your ability one side to the other is different. And this idea of being ambidextrous, you know, I'm a surgeon, I'm reasonably good with both hands because it's the nature of my training, many, many years to be able to do it. But I remember when my kids were younger, trying to put them to sleep. So one wanted to be patted and the other one wanted the head scratched. So I had to be able to pat with one hand and scratch with the other.
And were you able to?
No, it actually took some time.
That is difficult.
But I'm a surgeon. You know, I can tie knots with both hands. I can use instruments with both hands. I can use, you know, I can use a drill upside down, in either hand. But those were all learned skills over many years. So suddenly when I had two kids demanding attention at the same time.
So as you said, the brain can actually, you can actually train the brain to do stuff like this.
And I eventually did. Now I can. Now they don't really.
And then now they don't need it.
No, now they don't need it. Yeah. So I'm just waiting for my grandchildren, which is obviously a long way away, but it's the principle.
You will have to train your brain all over again
in
years to come, isn't it? So the question is, can we fix it if we do have a muscle imbalance?
Yeah.
It's interesting. I want to also know if, you know, there's genes that's affecting this imbalance. Then what do you do, right? That's coming up next. If you have a question for Dr. Rajesh, we're discussing laterality, which is us preferring one side of the body over the other way, you know, because we're asymmetrical to a very large extent. Do give us a call. The number's 03-77-109-000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 016-201-9000. Good afternoon. It's Health and Living and I'm Mira Sivasodhi. In the studio with me, Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon. We are discussing laterality. We're discussing our musculoskeletal system and how sometimes we, one side of our body, we seem to prefer it over the other. We are, as Dr. Rajesh said, most of us are asymmetrical, which is rather we are the rule, not the exception. So if you do have a symmetrical body, there's a high, he looks at it as you being the anomaly, actually.
I'd say the exception, not the anomaly.
Okay, all right, the exception.
Let's be kind.
Okay, all right.
You're perfect. You're abnormal.
Yeah, I know, and I don't like you because of that. What about left hand being left-handed and right-handed? Okay. Does that contribute towards laterality? Because, you know, we do know in our Asian cultures, a lot of time we don't like our children to be left-handed, and so we hit them. We do all sorts of things to make them right-handed. And you know, are we causing damage?
Okay, look, I see them now. So when I ask somebody, are you right-handed or left-handed? They say, I hold a pen in my right hand, but I do everything else with my left hand. I say, okay, so what was your school life like? Oh, it's a bit tough, right? So those people were born left-handed, but they were socialized into being right-handed. Mm-hmm. You know, that's sort of a given. I think if you take it in a reasonable proportion, it's probably not problematic. Your dominance is probably not problematic. There are people, though, whom I've seen reasonable wear and tear on the right side. You know, right shoulder, right elbow, right wrist, and completely nothing on the left. And what comes out is they say, I'm very right-sided. I don't do anything at all with my left. So I think in terms of laterality causing a problem, I would say neglect causes a bit more of a problem rather than the fact that you are asymmetric, or the fact that you have preference of one side or the other.
So if you do know you seem to be doing that, can you build up the left side?
You can. It's more an issue of habit. Just try for yourself. If you pick up a glass to drink, which hand do you use normally?
The right, always.
Right, always. Just try picking it up with the left, right? And you'll find, hang on, that didn't really work because there's something else in my way. My table wasn't set up for me to use my left hand. So it's a relatively interesting academic exercise to look at how the world is structured. So the world is structured for right-handedness because most people are right-handed. The world is not structured for left-handedness. I mean, just ask anybody who's certified left-handed and didn't receive any special training to use their right hand. They will tell you that the world's unfairly stacked against them.
Mm-hmm. And does that mean that if you are, if you do train yourself, in fact, to do more things with the left hand, does that translate back to the brain? Because you did say the neuromuscular connections,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Does that mean, in a way, a part of the brain will be training as well?
I would assume so. You know, you can't assume not. But if you ask me where's the evidence, I'd say it's just anecdotal based on my experience and what I've seen. The relevance to me is really far more practical. So somebody comes in with shoulder pain, restricted range of movement, can't do things. I'll treat the shoulder. I'll say, look, you've got adhesive capsulitis. I've treated that now. They've got good range of movement, but it's painful for them to be able to do things with that side. You know, say, look, you know, if I just do my normal things, it's okay. But the more I do, the more it hurts. I say to them, start doing more things with your other side. And they go, ooh, well, I never really thought about that.
Yeah, neither have I, actually.
Right. So that's the idea. The idea of you have a part that's not as strong, not as good, because wear, tear, repair. So the wear and tear's progress, the repair's not so good because you're not so young anymore. I can do surgery. You know, it's easy for me to fix. But have you considered the logical, practical other choice, which is just use the other side a little bit more? And people will come back and just say, I keep forgetting to do it. You know, they'll come back to clinic after 6 weeks and I'll say, how was it? They say, oh, you know, it was great for the first 3 weeks. And then, you know, it started aching a little bit more. And I say, well, how much have you used your other side? Oh, yeah, that thing.
So it goes back to the mindfulness, as you were talking about just now.
Yeah, I think mindfulness is sort of a popular term that can be a little bit cliched.
Well, I look at it as just being in the present, being conscious.
No, I look at it as having behaviors which are automated. So simple thing, kids and soft drinks, right? So it's sort of reasonably topical now with kids of that age. So when we go to a restaurant, the kids want a soft drink, because we're habituated that when we go to a restaurant, they get a soft drink. So it's not that they particularly desire a soft drink. It's just contextualized. When they're at a restaurant, they'll get a soft drink. So I said, no, we don't get soft drinks at restaurants anymore. So that took a little bit of adjustment. But now when you go to a restaurant, it's no soft drink. It's automatically water on the table. So I think with the skeleton as well, it's really very much the same. You get into your car. Which hand do you use to pull the seatbelt? It's the same hand every single time. Even if the hand hurts, you will use your painful hand to pull the seatbelt. You won't stop to think to use the not painful hand, right? So it's probably more, I'd say, awareness more than mindfulness.
Okay.
Because mindfulness means that, you know, you've got to be in this sort of constant state of bliss and radiating positive energy and little flowers and unicorns.
That's
and all that.
That's not what I thought. No? Mindfulness is just being in the present and focusing on one thing at a time rather than, you know, having a barrage of things running through your head.
That's not possible.
And then that's when you start doing things in this automatic mode, really.
Yeah,
but, because there's just so much to deal with.
But I got out of the car today, you know, my SMSs were going off. I was looking at where I was going to park. You know, it's flooding. It's going to flood. It's where there's too many things going on all the time.
Yep.
You know, so...
And then you'll unbuckle your seatbelt
and then
with the very same
with
hand
the very
that
same
you do
hand that
over the last 5 years.
Forever since I started driving. And it aches, you know, that particular position. I went, okay, next time. You know, and then next time comes along and I do it again and then it hurts.
Okay, so just change things up a little.
Just change things up a little bit. You know, you've got two sides, no use one being used 100% and the other not being used at all.
Mm-hmm. What about athletes, tennis players? They seem to be using one arm more than the other.
Yeah.
Does that mean you would end up with a an imbalance, look, inevitably?
I think it depends on the level of athletes. You know, the highest level of athletes I work with, I'm just completely amazed. They're all brain. They're literally all brain. To them, the body is just a subservient. I think there's a quotation given by a runner that says, my mind runs, my legs are just rubber bands, you know. And the higher level athletes I work with, the more I see. To them, the body part's like, you know, just a machine. And that particular gear or that particular sprocket or that particular thing is broken. And I'm literally just a mechanic that welds it back together, stitches it back together, screws it back together so that they can use it. And the ability to work around it's phenomenal. But all that happens in the brain. It doesn't happen in the part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so... And that's actually very interesting for me as an orthopedic surgeon. You know, so for me as an orthopedic surgeon, to look at this and go, I'm dealing with the mechanics of the machine. But the soul of the machine I rarely see. You know, so to see the soul of the machine with an athlete is just really, really humbling to realize that, you know, there's that saying, I but dress the wound, God heals it.
Mm-hmm.
That's really profound sometimes.
Okay. And so do you find that a challenge for you when it comes to helping people recover?
No, I think my challenge with athletes is those with not enough brain. You know, those with enough brain, they really, 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 really get it.
And when you say brain, what do you mean?
Okay, so they understand that it's not about their shoulder. They understand it's not about their Achilles tendon. They understand it's not about their back. They understand that it's about their performance and how this particular part relates to their performance. So there's a young badminton player whom I'm treating at the minute, and he's just incredible in the way that he says, okay, my Achilles tendon hurts. I've tried using these other sets of tendons to create these sorts of movements, and I can only compensate it so far. And then with this particular movement that I try and do, that's when I need my Achilles and it's not there. You know, so for him to be able to sort of articulate that to me is amazing because he's gone the full distance. The difficulty that I have is those who come in and go, you know, this thing's still not better, right? I go, well, adaptation, zero. Mental involvement, zero. It's just mechanical.
So my question then is, you know, a lot of us now are sent to physiotherapists after surgery or when we have injuries and stuff like that. Just moving a little away from a muscle imbalance. How much of it is brain?
It's all
when
brain.
It comes to recovery.
It's all brain. So what your physiotherapist does is your physiotherapist will rightly look at the mechanics of it and say, now the mechanic, you know, the machine works, you're just not running it correctly. So all the gears are in place, all the sprockets, you know, I can turn the gear and, you know, the output comes out the other side. Now you try to turn the gear and see whether the output comes out the other side or not. And that's what good physiotherapists do. So, you know, philosophically, I disagree with physiotherapy being the idea of being strapped to a machine and being left alone and the therapist walking away. Sometimes they'll do that for a particular modality, you know, some electrical treatment, some heat treatment, some whatever. That's a modality. Modality means you're using it for a specific purpose. You know, I want to control swelling, I want to control pain. I don't physically have to be present. But my idea of physiotherapy is it's a one-to-one where you and the therapist are together and the therapist is literally your coach. So I think that this idea of laterality and use of the skeletal system, the coaching model is the most appropriate.
Okay. We're going to come back and find out more about, you know, how you spoke about nobody teaches babies, children, toddlers to walk. Mm. Can things be fixed at that stage? Mm. We'll come back and find out more. Up next, if you have a question for Dr. Rajesh, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 016-201-9000. Good afternoon. And if you have just joined us, welcome. It's our Health and Living segment. In the studio with me, Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon. we're discussing muscle imbalance. Just to recap, when we say muscle imbalance, we're talking about our body, us and our preference to use one side of the body over the other. This can happen in many ways, one of which, you know, we just seem to be more comfortable. For an example, if you're right-handed, you sort of neglect the left side of the body and, you know, you don't realize you're doing that. If you are an athlete, sometimes you tend to use some muscles more than the other, depending on the sport you're involved in. And also sometimes with injury, you tend to overcompensate with the other side without you realizing it because of the injury. So, you know, earlier on you spoke about how nobody teaches us how to walk, Dr. Rajesh. So, and if 99% of us are asymmetrical, can we fix it at that stage when we are learning how to walk?
It's interesting you say that because it lends itself to the idea of individuality, doesn't it? That not everybody should be doing things exactly the same. But we expect our kids to march. We expect them to march to the same drumbeat with the same stride in sync. So I think that's probably an example of doing it completely wrong. It's much better to look at what kids do and help them towards achieving a particular goal. So I'm slightly reticent with my kids in sports because I see the stereotypical coaching going on, which is you will do it this way, rather than here's the principle of what we need to do. Let's see how you as an individual are going to do it, which is why, you know, you see some of the most colorful sporting characters like cricketers. You know, cricketers are just a classic. To be able to throw the ball in cricket, some people use the shoulder, some people use the elbow, some people use the wrist. They're all sort of little tweaks and twerks. But every person's got a very different and flamboyant style. You don't have the classic stereotypical movement, which I think, you know, that's why I think sort of throwing games are very interesting.
But then again, it goes back to strategy as well, isn't it?
No, strategy is for the game. The question is, what is the style of throwing? So, I mean, just look at these people. You see people walking around, right? And whenever my wife and I travel, we just... People watching is our complete favorite.
Right.
You know, other than sort of the very sad, we're both doctor spot diagnosis. You know, I got that and you didn't. We're interested. We're going, okay, you know, look at that. And, you know, it's not, oh my God, I can't believe how top heavy she is. Mm-hmm. It's really more... look at that family and look at what they're doing. You know, because you'll see dad walking in a certain way, and then you'll see the boys walking in a certain way, and then you'll see mum walking in a certain way, and then you'll see the girls walking in a certain way. And that's very, very, very interesting. That the entire movement for that family is stereotypically programmed.
So I'm going to ask you then, how much of it is genetic?
Interesting question. There must be.
So if dad walks in a certain way, there's a chance, you know, baby's going to start walking in a certain way as well.
Because he's predisposed to, because he's manufactured in that way. Yeah, probably. You know, I certainly think that genetics does have an element to it. But a lot of that stops when we're adults, doesn't it? You know, you look around the office and you would see that the patterns of movement in the office are much less varied than patterns of movement in, you know, a childcare or a kindergarten or even a primary school. And you see that in schools. You know, when I go to my kids' schools for the PTAs, I'm just people watching again. And so you watch...
I'm glad I'm not in the same school as your children, actually. You're a horrible man.
Why? It's interesting because it says a lot about what our society is. So you look at the younger years...
You are the rest.
You look at the younger years and you look at their movements. Their movements are completely non-stereotypical. You look at the older years and all their movements are stereotypical. So get up from your chair, move away from your desk and form a line. You look at the kids do it and then you look at the big kids do it. They're completely different, right? And then you wonder why the big kids start having aches like adults. Because the big kids are doing the same stereotypical movement again and again and again and again without thinking about it. The little kids are doing different movements each time. Very subtly, very nuanced but slightly different movements enough to be noticed to the keen eye every single time.
Why do you think that's the case, though? What happens as we grow?
We become lazy.
Complacent.
No, we become lazy. We just learn that. Because you asked me, who teaches us? And I think that we teach ourselves. And when we teach ourselves, we learn bad habits, and those bad habits are never corrected. So perhaps, in a way, mindfulness is a really useful term, I think, that you've raised. To be mindful of your posture, to be mindful of your position, and to be mindful of what your movement is. You know, so that lady in the lovely color sitting outside the window now, she's been sitting in that position at her computer for the last, I don't know, since I've been in the studio, she hasn't moved at all. So when she says my shoulder aches, particularly why it aches, she's very absorbed in her work, I'm sure, but it's that stereotypical movement. You know, her neck hasn't moved, her shoulder hasn't moved, just her fingers are moving on the mouse, and that's it. So that's not normal. To be able to sit in that posture for 30, 40 minutes puts a demand on the skeleton which is not usual.
So immediately, if I have to try and determine whether or not I have some kind of a muscle imbalance, how do I find out?
Just be aware, see how it feels. You know, sit down at your office, start working, set the little beep on your digital device, and at the beep time, ask yourself, what do I feel? Is it comfortable all over, or is it slightly uncomfortable here, slightly uncomfortable there? And then what happens when I change my posture? What do I feel? So it's that what do I feel question that's really quite instructive. And, you know, it's not the easiest question to ask. You know, this is my business. I do it every single day. But I'm as guilty as everybody else. At the end of a long day, I go, ooh, that hurts. And then, you know, I twist my back and it goes crack, 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 crack. And I go, that feels a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
So a lifetime of bad habits haven't been corrected by a few years of professional awareness.
Of course. And how do you know if it's something more sinister?
Okay, the rule is always it should not keep hurting. I have a gentleman I'm seeing later this evening whose shoulder's been hurting for 10 months. Now, I treated him once, we fixed one problem, and the second part of his problem's still there. So he knows what the problem is. He just doesn't want to get it. He didn't want to get it fixed yet because he couldn't afford the downtime, right? But he knew what the problem was, and he was waiting with the pain for 10 months until it was suitable for him to fix the pain. I think to answer your question specifically, though, any condition which is painful, that's recurrently painful, that doesn't get better with the usual things, like a little bit of massage, a little bit of physiotherapy, a little bit of chiropractic treatment, all those usual, a little bit of mindfulness, all right? If what you do doesn't get better with any of those things, then it's probably time to get an opinion.
Okay. All right then. So don't come running to you as a yet.
No, and, you know, at the very least, do some mindfulness.
Okay. All right.
At the very least, a little bit of, you know, where am I? Where are all the bits? What hurts? What do I do to change it? If I do something, does it make a difference? If you've done all those things and then it still hurts, then that's perfectly fair. Come say hello.
A lot of us are into extreme exercise, extreme fitness. Mm. Your thoughts on that?
Slowly, you know, extreme fitness I think I have a lot of respect for people who are able to get to that level because it's not necessarily easy to do. You know, it requires a singularity of mind, a focus, a grit and determination. So I do have a lot of respect for people who do it. The point, though, is if you're recurringly injuring yourself and you're unable to catch those injuries and correct them, then you're doing harm. You know, so I'm actually reasonably supportive of any high-level performance, of anyone or anything, because it shows a singularity and applied a sense of application, which personally I respect.
The brain,
that's exactly right.
Goes back to the brain,
goes back to the brain, the singularity of mind.
Absolutely. So would you have a message for us as far as laterality is concerned?
Yeah, I think if you're not sure what your laterality is, find out. how do you find out? Be mindful. And once you find out, if you have an ache or a pain or it's uncomfortable or you're fatigued easily when you do things, ask yourself, is this because of my laterality? And just change the sort of simple things that nobody taught you to do. But you can obviously just look at yourself and go, okay, now what do I need to do? And if that doesn't work and it's still sore, then come say hello.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining us today. Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon on muscle imbalance on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.